Today we have Dr. Suzette Sutherland from the University of Washington. Hi, Dr. Sutherland. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm just really honored to participate in this and something that's very near and dear to my heart and a passion of mine, which is global health. So thank you for inviting me.
Yes, thank you. So let me start out by asking, when did you first start doing humanitarian work in urology?
Well, I've been involved in humanitarian work on various levels for many years now, but my first actual medical mission as a urologist was just only 3 years ago. It was a trip to Dakar, Senegal in West Africa. I went with a team from IVU Med. It was a trip that was meant to provide educational opportunities, didactic sessions, hands-on surgical training for residents, urology residents, and urologists that were at the public hospital there in Dakar, and really focusing on the area of female urology, incontinence and prolapse, female pelvic health overall. Certainly, many trips are familiar with the vesicovaginal fistula issues. In our mission, although we saw a number of fistulas and took care of a number of them as well, but was really to focus on other issues that can happen to the woman rather than just the fistula, or after fistula repair, the woman still has incontinence or prolapse, and how should that be addressed? So we were trying to fill a need. We'd identified a gap in the educational training there and just filling that need in the area of sort of basic female urology skills.
That's wonderful that you got to use your skills and to do that type of work. And let me just ask, what motivates you to do this work and why is it so important to you?
Well, I think no matter what it is you do, having a global view of the world is always beneficial to everyone. We really can't exist in a bubble. In many ways, it might be really easy to live in a very privileged bubble that we have here in the United States, but I believe we really have a moral obligation to use that privilege and our gifts to share it with those who are, by comparison, less fortunate. Certainly, every time I go, though, I also learn so much from the people who are there, whether it's from other urologists and surgeons, from the nurses, or even from the patients. I learn about being creative, about having to be flexible, being optimistic, even in really dire circumstances. And I really learn about the human nature and the true resilience of the human spirit. When I come home, I feel so much more enriched and invigorated, and I really have a renewed sense of purpose when dealing with my own patients that I hopefully bring back to them, and hopefully that's noticeable to them. But it certainly gives me a greater sense of purpose overall. So I'm thankful for the experience myself.
Definitely. It's wonderful that you can use your gifts and really make an impact on these people's lives in these underserved areas. So how is it what you are doing making an impact on their life? You probably think, it's not, maybe not as big, but for them, it's probably life-changing for them.
Well, I guess I would say I see the impact sort of really twofold in two main buckets, if you will. The first, of course, is the impact to the patient. So depending on where they are or where we're going in the world, we're often providing a level of service that might not otherwise be able to be offered to that patient, especially in the case of more complicated medical or surgical situations where the medical or surgical resources just aren't available. So we're providing that service to the patient, and certainly that's an impact directly on them. But secondly, the other bucket really is, and more importantly, to some degree, is for sustainability of these medical efforts. So the impact really being on that medical community there, the providers, the physicians, the surgeons, the nurses, the clinic and the hospital staff, so on and so forth. So through education and training of these other people, the medical training, surgical training, and even hospital administrative training, how to acquire resources, That's where the true sustainability happens. So for us to just go in, sweep in there, take care of a handful of patients and sweep back home, we feel good about ourselves. We did a great job. We helped some people. But is that really sustainable? No. The real success happens when countries are able to provide services for themselves. So if we're able to go in there and help them with those resources such that they don't need us anymore, that's true success. So may I guess if I can elaborate just for a moment, when we talk about global health, what is really global health? We talk about three pillars of global health. The first one is what I already mentioned, is providing the healthcare to the patients, but really providing quality healthcare. We want to be providing the same care that we would be providing to patients at home, even though we're in a low resource setting, and as the best of our ability to do that. The second pillar is to make that quality care sustainable. And to do that, it might mean providing physical resources such as equipment, might mean education, training, skills training, surgical training. And then it also involves investing in that community, finding out just what that community needs in order to provide that quality healthcare and make it sustainable in that community. And then the third pillar really deals with research, outcomes research efforts, assessing the efficacy of our efforts. How well are we doing? Are we making a difference and a difference that's needed? And then identifying gaps within that community. Where should we be focusing our attention and our efforts and our resources to make the most impact in that community? So that's really what we focus on in the area of global health, not just going in and treating some patients, although they are firsthand beneficiaries of our work, but it's really much more than that. It's trying to make that a sustainable effort.
No, thank you for breaking it down about global health for us. That's really helpful and really eye-opening to really look at the overall big picture. That's wonderful. When you do go on each individual mission, I'm sure the environment looks completely different than what your traditional clinical setting would look like. Can you explain to me or to everyone listening what the difference is and how it just contrasts to your daily setting?
One thing I would say that you really learn is, what do you really need in order to accomplish the job? And what is really extra convenience luxury? So we see all of the equipment that we use sometimes when we're at home, and you get to a setting where you're not afforded that luxury of all those different things to choose from. You really need to pare it down to, what do you really need to accomplish the task? And it's a great way to think, right? Just for efficiency's sake, and just to be really good stewards of the limited resources that are there. We don't want to waste. The residents who work with me in the OR, they know I am such a stickler about waste. We do see it often, unfortunately. We do our best to try and keep it to a minimum. But we've done things here in our ORs to try and look at packaging equipment in such a way that just that equipment, which is usually utilized, gets opened and not big trays of all of this other superfluous things that never get used. So it takes a lot of effort, but I think it's definitely well worth it. And then you also learn, I already alluded to this a bit, you learn to be creative, using whatever resources are available to hopefully achieve the same goal that you would if you were back home, right? We don't want to cut any corners with respect to the quality of care, but sometimes we have to be really creative with what we're handed in the OR. But it's always important to make sure the quality of care is never compromised. So being creative, being flexible, you can imagine people have heard lots of different stories, have been there where, you know, to go scrub at the scrub sink, something happened with the plumbing and the water wasn't working. And so the support staff there poured bottles of, sterile water over our hands while we tried to scrub, or the lights that went out and we're operating with headlights. So those things, you can't lose your cool. you just have to keep your resilience and keep just moving forward in whatever situation you have. But those are great skills and great things to learn. So I'm very fortunate to have been in a position to be able to learn those things.
Definitely. That's so interesting. I'm sure on each mission, you have so many stories that you could probably share with us. But is there one story in particular that really has just stuck with you that you could share with us today?
Oh, my. Yes. You know, this is one when people ask me about, this question, I guess, what patients really stick with you. And there's one who often comes to mind, and it's not really a surgical thing, but just, you know, a story about the resilience of the human spirit. And it was a young girl who was only 18 years old, and she had a child when she was pregnant. I mean, at the age of 16, she went into labor, and of course the baby got stuck. She lost the baby, didn't get to a hospital in time. And of course, they ended up doing a C-section to get the baby out, and the baby was then again gone. But it had already caused a lot of damage, as we know that can happen in the vaginal area, and she had a vesicovaginal fistula. She'd had it repaired. The repair didn't work for her, and it had recurred. She had it repaired again, and that didn't work. She was still leaking. So now here she was in the city of Dakar. This was on my first mission trip there, and she was going to have it repaired again. So this was considered a center of excellence for fistula work. As she was being put to sleep, she spoke French, and it's a French part of West Africa. So we couldn't understand, but the anesthesiologist was helping to translate for us, and she was crying. And we were holding her hand and trying to comfort her. And the anesthesiologist, we said, she must be so scared to go to sleep. The anesthesiologist said, no, that's not it. She just learned that she lost her mother yesterday. Her mother had died. And I just thought, dear Lord, here is this 18-year-old girl who was pregnant at 16, lost a baby, has about ready to embark on her third surgery to fix a problem from that traumatic experience, and now has lost a significant person in her life. And I just thought, what a testament to the resilience of our human spirit. It was just an amazing story for me to say, what we're handed, we just need to keep moving forward. And this was an example of a young woman who was just moving forward. Yeah. So that's a heartbreaking story, I know. But again, it's one that carries me forward and helps me keep moving forward when I have hard days. We all have them, right? So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. And it's really eye-opening for everyone listening. Moving on, why is it so important for organizations like the Urology Care Foundation to support these global efforts?
Well, again, I would go back to the idea of those three pillars of global health, and that's where the Urology Care Foundation is positioned very well to help in each one of those pillars so that we're able to support our global brothers and sisters around the world. The Urology Care Foundation is helping to support financially trips. So for providers from here to be able to go over and share in their talents and their expertise, but also I think helping to support financially, not only equipment, but also research efforts. Which was that third pillar, to support some of those efforts that are happening, hopefully somewhat boots on the ground, but they also need other people who are able to help coordinate those efforts to make sure that even the financial resources are being used to their best to make the most impact when they're looking at outcomes research. So it's very important. So I'm very excited that the Urology Care Foundation has made a decision to make this a mission to invest in this area of global health. So I applaud them. I'm very thankful. I think that it sends a big message to our urology community.
That's great. Now, going on these missions, I know you can't just hop on a plane and just go and, you know, go on these trips. What do you need to do to be able to prepare for this type of work for these trips? Or do you have to coordinate medicines or travel, equipment, that sort of thing with each organization that you go with? Or how does it work for the preparation part of it?
Well, there are a number of different organizations that help to organize these kinds of trips. And so they take care of the greater lion's share of those kinds of things. Since my time with being supported by IVU Med, I have gone over now twice a year to the same place, investing in the same place in that community in Dakar, Senegal. Then I do bring over my own resources or things to leave there so that they can use them. We use them while I'm there, or and then also extra so that they have them at their fingertips to use. So certainly equipment, sometimes it's large purchases of equipment, and then where you're raising funds to try and acquire that equipment and send it. So that's where larger organizations are much more helpful in that regard. But I think coordinating the trip, certainly just bringing some things. I have, all the residents know waste is an issue for me in the OR. And when things are opened unnecessarily, but still good, we put them in a bucket, and that's my Senegal bucket. And I bring a lot of supplies with me. So certainly coordination when you're going with other people, and then coordination with the people to where you're going. So what are their needs? It does no one any good to just drop on someone's doorstep with all this equipment and say, I'm here to help. Where do we go? That question and the answer to that question needs to be identified before you go, so that there are patients that are there that are waiting for you that you can actually help. And so that you can coordinate, make best use of your time there.
No, that's great. No, definitely a lot of prep work involved for sure. And a lot of communication involved in order for the planning. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us today about your volunteer work?
Well, I think anyone who goes on a medical mission will tell you that they are forever grateful for that experience. It really opens up your eyes to so many things that I've already mentioned here today. Certainly opens up your eyes about how you can be a better surgeon, how you can do things differently, more efficiently, more concisely, and then opens your eyes to the needs of the world around you. Again, being in our privileged bubble, if we never look outside beyond our own walls, we don't know what's going on in the rest of the world. And you'd be surprised what seems very simple to you is not simple to others. And so going over and just sharing of your talents, sometimes people underestimate what they're able to do here in the United States. But you find that there is a huge need out there, and you are always a sought after resource for your skills in medicine and surgery. So, I think I highly recommend to all residents and medical students when I mentor them or talk to them about getting involved somehow in some volunteer work because it just enriches your life so much. And then the other thing I would also say, as much of what I've already alluded to and talked about today, is it's really great you're going to get into this work to really focus on an area. Rather than going to a different location every time you go around, we call that medical tourism. And we really want to get away from that. That opens your eyes maybe to more places and more things for yourself, but you are the one who has gained the most. When you're really working in the area of global health, you also want to know, you want to really be reaching out, what can I be providing for this community? So investing in the community, I think, is very, very important. Going back that second, third, and fourth time, your eyes are opened even wider to things that you didn't even see the first few times. And that's where you can make the greatest impact.
Dr. Sutherland, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your experiences with us and inspiring those listening to give back to urology globally. And I really do appreciate your time.
Well, thank you once again for this great opportunity. I'm just really, really feel privileged to participate in this. And I'm so excited the Urology Care Foundation has gotten involved in global health. So thank you very much to the Urology Care Foundation.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Urology Care Foundation, the official foundation of the American Urological Association. For more information on today's topic and for all things urology health, visit urologyhealth.org. That's urologyhealth.org.